If you only listen to our podcasts, I want to encourage you to visit unfetteredmind.org. Here you'll find, free of charge, dozens of original articles and contemporary translations of Buddhist texts and prayers. If you find these helpful, please make a donation at unfetteredmind.org/donate so we can continue to expand the website and support your practice. Thanks.
Unfettered Mind, the nuts and bolts of working with the breath.
And the practice we're going to do now this is a very, very ancient method or approach in Buddhist practice. We use the breath as a basis in which to move, or on which to move into the union of knowing and experience. Now, as I said yesterday, this particular technique is based on the Full Awareness of Breathing Sutra, which, along with the Foundation of Mindfulness Sutra, are the two core sutras of the Theravadin tradition and also the basis of the Zen tradition. And it's well worth reading these, and neither of them are particularly long. They're quite concise and compact, and there's endless amount of commentary that can be given on them. And Thich Nhat Hanh, and many of you I know have done retreats with him, is a very quite an amazingly skillful teacher. I'm very, very impressed with his ability to take what can be quite abstruse aspects of Buddhist practice and make them very alive and very, very accessible. And in 1989, I was at a retreat with him that he was giving to mental health professionals. And he took this bit of Abhidharma describing the emergence of experience, consciousness, and subject-object framework, which is really dry technical stuff. And just it was just beautiful the way he expressed it and made it very, very alive. And so he has taken the Full Awareness of Breathing Sutra, which has actually 16 steps in it, brought it down to 5. Now, I say steps, but this is really to be understood as phases. So it's not like you walk through this, but you work in one phase and it will mature into a second, and into the third, into the fourth, and the fifth. And that's very important, is to allow that maturation to take place naturally rather than trying to force it. And the other element that Thich Nhat Hanh brings into this, which is so useful, is how to hold something in attention. And the image he uses is that of holding a newborn, your own newborn child. And the adjective that is probably most apt in English for this is tenderly, the adverb. And tenderness is a very interesting word, because while it certainly carries the idea of gentleness, it's not just soft. there has to be something behind that tenderness. So when you're holding a baby, you can't be completely relaxed, because you actually have to support and hold it. At the same time, if you're holding with any kind of tension or something like that, then you just hurt the child. Now, there are many parts of our experience which we, for one reason or another, are alienated to a greater or lesser extent. And this technique is about holding those elements of our experience from which we are alienated, or they are alienated from us, i.e. there is a real sense of separation. So I want to do this in the form of a guided meditation so that you have the idea of it. And to begin with, I want you to choose a painful experience, a difficult feeling, maybe a situation, interaction that is painful for you. And positive interactions can be difficult just as much as negative ones. So it doesn't have to be necessarily negatively toned. It can be a problem, an emotion, or some actual physical or emotional pain. And just bringing it to mind, you can notice, like, I'm here and that's there. And we don't want to deal with it. That's how we all are. We'd be much happier if it would just go away. But it's part of our experience. And because we are ultimately not separate from our experience, sooner or later, we're going to have to deal with it. And by pushing it away, or erecting a wall, or not dealing with it, we're actually creating an imbalance in our world of experience, which manifests as imbalance in our lives, and can lead to, in the case of interactions with other people, the disruption or even the dissolution of relationships which we value. So this is quite important. So the first phase is breathing in. I experienced this, and I'm going to use the word feeling, but it could be emotion, it could be pain, it could be problem, and you just fill in the blank. So let's just do that. You take this, you say, breathing in, I feel this pain. You breathe in, breathing out, I feel this pain. With each breath, breathing in, I feel this pain. Breathing out, I feel this pain. Now, in the beginning, depending on what you've chosen, that may be a bit like a hot potato. Ow. So there are two methods I found which can at least get us in touch with it to some extent. The first is, okay, that's too hot, too difficult, too much for my capacity of attention at this point. So experience 1/10 of it, or 1/100, or 1/1000. And that approach works for some people. For other people, they find it more helpful to think, well, that's too close. If I put it on the other side of the room, well, maybe on the other side of town. So it's, quotation marks, a safe distance away, but still in one's awareness. So the first step is just to bring it into awareness, either a small piece of it or at a proximity that you can handle. And that's for you to determine in your own practice. So set it up that way, whatever's appropriate for you. We go back to phase one. Breathing in, I experience this pain. Breathing out. And imagine holding the pain tenderly in your attention, which means you're not going to do anything to it, and you're not trying to get anything from it. You're just holding it. You're holding it very, very gently. Now, as you do that, phase two starts almost immediately. In phase two, we become aware of our reactions to that pain. Basically, there are three kinds of reactions that arise. There are reactions in the body. In some cases, we may flinch or tense against the pain, like in a defensive posture or something. Maybe there are feelings of nausea or discomfort in various parts of our body. But there are actual physical reactions to the pain or the feeling. Secondly, there are emotional reactions. With the pain or the feeling, when you start holding it, you may feel some fear or some anxiety. Maybe there's some anger or sadness. Maybe jealousy comes in, or grief, or wanting. There are all of these different possibilities. And those are the emotional reactions. And then there are the stories and associations. Oh, this is always happening to me. I always get into this kind of mess. Or, this has never happened to me before. I don't understand how this could have possibly happened. Or, this was all my fault. Or, this was terrible, what people did to me. How could they treat me like that? There are all of these different stories. So the second phase is, breathing in, I experience the reactions to the pain. Breathing out, I experience the reactions to the pain. And start with the physical, and when you can be in the physical reactions, then include the emotional. And when you can be in the physical and the emotional, then include the stories, the associations, the cognitive reactions. And as you do this, you'll find yourself moving into a fuller experience of the pain or feeling itself. So phase two builds on phase one and actually enriches it. So let's do that for a few minutes together. Breathing in, I feel the reactions to the pain. Breathing out, I feel the reactions to the pain. And just as you hold the initial pain or feeling tenderly, so also hold all of the reactions in your body, the emotional reactions, and the stories, tenderly in attention. Don't try to make them one way or the other. Don't try to get rid of the physical discomforts. Just hold them tenderly in attention and let them be experienced. Phase three begins with the discovery that even though we're in the presence of a uncomfortable or difficult pain or feeling, we can actually be in that experience and quiet, calm. That is, we can be experiencing the pain and all of the reactions to the pain, and that can all be going on, and yet there is the capacity to have a sense of calm in all of that. So the third phase is breathing in, I experience calm with this pain. Breathing out, I experience calm with this pain. Now, I'm doing this, taking you through this. You may or may not be there with your particular pain, something like that. But the possibility is there. And if you have it at an appropriate distance from me, or just working with the right fraction of it, then you can experience, oh yes, I can experience this and be calm. I don't have to be fighting against it. So let's just do this for a few minutes. Breathing in, I experience calm in the feeling. Breathing out, I experience calm with the feeling. And the fourth phase begins with the discovery that in that calm we can actually relax. We discover, sometimes to our surprise, a sense of ease. So here's this difficult feeling which we are experiencing, but our experience now has a basis of calmness, and we begin to relax into the feeling. And this is the beginning of very important point in practice, resting in the experience. By this point in this process, we have a pretty full experience of the feeling and everything that's going on with it. And we've discovered the calm, and now we begin to rest in the experience. That's that sense of ease or relaxation. As Gunaratna says, when your mind joins with the object of attention, body and mind both relax. That's what's being pointed to here. So we'll just do this for a few moments together, but go back to that sense of calm and then just rest in the calm, letting the feeling and all of the reactions be there, but resting in the calm at the same time. Breathing in, I experience ease in the feeling. Breathing out, I experience ease in the feeling. Now you may find that when you start relaxing in the feeling, you suddenly experience the feeling more completely and you tense up again, push it away. So this takes you back to phase one, but now you're working at a deeper level. And the way this particular practice works, there's a constant cycling, going through phase one, phase two, sometimes back to phase one right there, phase three, phase four, you begin to relax, you experience more of the feeling, or now you're able to bring the feeling closer to you, and everything becomes more vivid, more awake. And so now you work again with phase one. So there's a constant cycling back, but each time you cycle back, you're moving into a deeper and deeper experience of the feeling. You're moving closer to the feeling, the experience of the feeling itself. And that process goes on and on, depending on the nature of the feeling, the degree of conditioning, how it's arising and so forth. That process can take anywhere from 5 seconds to 5 decades. So there's no specific time frame. And you may find at certain points that when you begin to relax, that feeling dissolves and just seems to vanish, and there's something else there. And if that's the case, then you begin working with that. Because you see that the original feeling was actually a layer which was obscuring something else underneath. And now you start working with what's underneath. And in either of these ways, you're moving deeper and deeper into your own experience. The fifth phase happens naturally one can say spontaneously. And it happens when you actually join with the feeling. That is, there's no longer any separation between one's the knowing and the experience. Or, to put it another way, the illusion of being separate from the experience crumbles. And what happens there is that an understanding naturally arises. You understand the feeling, you understand what it is, how it arises, and you can be fully in the experience of the feeling, and there is no confusion. So the fifth step is breathing in, I understand this feeling. Breathing out, I understand this feeling. Now, when that understanding arises, often it will take some form of cognitive thing. Oh, it's this and this and this. And people say, oh, I've had this insight, etc. Don't hang on to the insight. You go to with the insight, you actually fall into distraction. It arises. Rest in the understanding, not the formulation. The understanding or the knowing is like a quality of knowing there. Rest in that. It will feel, most of the time, like you have no reference. But that knowing is the union of knowing and experience. Now you're no longer separate from what you experience. So this technique uses the breath as a way of coming into the union of knowing and experience. Go through these five steps or five phases. Let them unfold naturally. Thich Nhat Hanh uses the image of holding the feeling tenderly in attention. Another image which I found very helpful is to imagine that you're holding a flower, but the flower hasn't opened. And your attention is like the sun. And just being in the breathing, letting your attention be with this flower, then the flower in its own time opens in the warmth of your attention. Microphone, Ellen. One second, please.
Thank you. Is there a difference between rest and observe? The reason I have the question, I've been taught to observe, watch my breath, for instance.
Yes.
And in my mind, the way I think, I watch it, I observe it with, and I don't deal with it or experience it, I just watch it.
Yeah.
When you say rest, which is the first time I've heard that expression in this context, that to me says immediately that I'm going to experience it. I'm going to involve myself in it in some way. So I guess my question is, what is the difference between the two so that I can get some understanding of what either means? Maybe it's the same. Am I making any sense?
You're making a great deal of sense. And I think it's a very important question. a great deal of meditation instruction is given in terms of watch the breath, put your attention on this object, etc. Some of this may be translation problem. I'm not sure. In my own practice, I found that the distancing that occurs with that instruction very problematic for all kinds of reasons. Other people, they don't have any problem with it, but for me it was a problem. And when I started to just rest in my experience of breathing as opposed to trying to watch the breath, there was a lot less struggle. I could actually start resting. And as I rested, quality of attention developed in a way that it didn't in the other approach. So, yes, there's a difference, I think. Okay. And I found that this notion of resting in our experience, very helpful, because it's something I can easily take into my life. Whatever's happening, I can just be in that, if you follow. And for me also, it gets rid of the tension that I found was created when I tried to, just as we were discussing in several of the questions already, when I was trying to observe the breath, I kept having to push this other stuff away. And that made a lot of struggle. When I rested in the experience, I didn't have to push any of that stuff away, because that was all part of the experience, which is basically what I've been trying to say today. But as I rested more and more deeply, I don't know whether any of that stuff goes away, but it ceases to distract. And that makes a difference. Does this help?
Yes.
Okay. So, question up here. I think we'll have to make this the last one.
According to what I've learned, it sounds like for her question, isn't it that the one-pointed meditation of watching the breath is shamatha, and the all-inclusive resting is vipassana, which are two different levels of meditation? That the first is the calm abiding, that the shamatha is given as an instruction to calm the mind, so that the resting and the vipassana can begin to happen.
That's very interesting. I think there's a difference in the way the same terminology is used in Theravada and Mahayana from your question. What you're describing would, in my own training, be described as two different aspects of shamatha. Yes. The first aspect is what is usually translated as mindfulness, which I don't like as a word anymore. And I know this is how it's defined in the Theravadan and the Mahayana tradition. It's defined as the mind joining with the object of attention. Not focused on, but joining with. And that, to me, comes about through resting. So the resting quality is very much there. As that resting quality develops, another aspect of attention starts. And we call that awareness, which is defined as, roughly, knowing what is going on. And it's the difference between meditating in a closet and meditating in an open field. That's a subjective feeling. And when that quality arises, then there's much less struggle, because you know what's going on, and there's a deeper level of resting. And you're still resting in the experience of the object, but you also know everything that's going on. Those two together form shamatha. What is called insight in Mahayana, in my own training, is another quality yet, which basically grows out of the awareness that I just mentioned, that expansion. But it takes it a step further. Because it's possible to rest. But then you learn to look in the resting. And we do this in various ways. I'm doing this with some of the questions today. But you're looking basically at what is this experience? Not trying to answer the question, but to look at it, or more precisely, into it. So there's a resting and a looking. Now, in the beginning, when people start to look, their attention destabilizes very, very quickly, which is why that resting quality is very important. As practice matures, then it becomes possible to rest in the looking and look in the resting. And now there's quite a different quality to practice. Does this fit with your experience?
It does.
Okay. We need to close here. Just slide the thing at the bottom to the off position. And thank you for your attention. I'd like us just, whatever good you feel has come out of this for you. That's highly questionable right there, but we won't dwell on that. Whatever good may have come out of our time together, just feel that. I'm just going to sit for a minute or two, and with the sentiment that you dedicate or give this good that you've experienced and dedicate it to the good of the world.
Unfettered Mind retains all rights to these podcasts. If you wish to use part or a whole podcast, please send an email to podcasts@unfetteredmind.org.